Feel deeply within. The presence of love as that beautiful artistic expression invites us to give ourselves to that. No matter what we have gone through, no matter our history, love awaits us. So I invite all listening, allow your physical body to be comfortable. Be friendly toward your body. Allow each inward breath to be as if you are breathing in love, releasing all difference, all conflict, all preference. Breathing in that love. And letting go. Breathing in love. Letting go of all that stands between ourselves and that love, allowing ourselves to be put aside so that only love remains, breath by breath. If there's anyone in your life you have conflict with, bring them into your heart now. If there's anyone in your life you miss, bring them also into your heart right now. Allow love, like a warm bath, to envelop all. Now held in those arms of love, may we feel and know that presence going forward. May this be a resting place we can return to again and again. Amen. Good morning. I appreciated very much that beautiful music, Sal, and just being in the presence in that meditation time. I hope it was meaningful for you. Just before church, we were talking about our homes and projects that we do, and it made me think about the fact that out in our rural Snohomish County home, Sally and I live up on a mountain, up a dirt and gravel road. You might say, actually, we live on a dirt road, gravel being just a kind of jumbo-sized dirt when you think about it. As a result, with the steep winding road, the near constant dust and mud on our car summer and winter, I don't tend to wash them all that often. Maintaining a city standard of cleanliness would be so constant as to give me time to do little else. But I do have a semi-annual ritual of car washing. A couple of times each summer, I bring out the hose and the bucket and the brush, and I was doing just that on a recent afternoon. I listened to some news as I was working and began thinking about a topic that came up over and over in the news: unrest in our country this summer. And on that particular day, a discussion of the death and legacy of civil rights hero John Lewis, the boy from Troy, as Martin Luther King called him. By the way, Lewis said that when he met King, he came in to this office and the reverend said, "You must be the boy from Troy." And he said, "Sir, my name is John Robert Lewis." And he said, "Yeah, you're the boy from Troy," and always called him that. South Carolina Congressman Jim Clyburn said in a recent interview that John Lewis, with whom he was friends for 60 years, always took the high road. He always took the high road. It made me want to ask myself and ask all of us, what road do we take each day? Do we always take that high road? Now, if I were to shuffle off the mortal coil this very day, and sometime thereafter my memorial were held on Zoom or however, what would my friends and my family say about me? I asked one of the groups I lead to participate in this, you might say morbid, but thought-provoking exercise of answering this question. It's a bit daunting to think about. For me, I'm pretty well convinced that those who know me best and somehow love me anyway would most likely not say he always took the high road. Up close and personal, I may tend to fail to exemplify my highest ideals. I don't know if I can change that in the days I have left to me or not, but I took comfort in Barack Obama's eulogy for Congressman Lewis when I heard it last month and when I've replayed it since. Quite early in his remarks, our former president said this: "Now, this country is a constant work in progress. We were born with instructions to form a more perfect union. Explicit in those words is the idea that we are imperfect. That what gives each new generation purpose is to take up the unfinished work of the last and carry it further than anyone might have thought possible." Now, President Obama, of course, referred to a societal and civil process of advancing in alignment with the ideals of our country. But just as surely, I believe, this could be seen as supporting each of us personally in our journeys from selfishness to selflessness, from despair to hope, and from hatred and bitterness to love. And if any of us think we have made it all the way on that love journey, that we are home free, that we have no further to go, well, I guess we'd just be fooling ourselves when we need to be schooling ourselves. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Jesus said to the crowds who heard him preach after he went up on a mountainside. Maybe that mountainside was a lot like the one where I was washing our cars that day, a good place to reflect. For when you do reflect on it, the instruction to love our enemies is a work order that gives us the opportunity for constant practice. I mean, everywhere we look, except perhaps inside this sanctuary today, right now, there are people we can easily talk ourselves into regarding as our enemies. Maybe they actually are that, or maybe we're just having a bad day. But to find folks we think of as enemies, at least for a moment, we don't have to travel far and conduct an exhaustive search. Unfortunately, there are difficult human beings all over the place. And guess what? Quite possibly some of them out there actually find this is true as well when they look at us. When I think about our dirt road, which you might even call the high road, for it does take you high up above the valley, I must tell you there are neighbors on that very road with whom we have ample opportunity to practice the instruction, love your enemies. Now, it would not be useful or proper for me to air our differences here. I'll do that in the Zoom coffee hour after church. But we do feel aggrieved from time to time by neighbors who seem to have a lot of complaints about us. Yes, about us. Can you believe that? And whose complaints seem definitely unfair, coming from neighbors on our road who don't seem to want to be our neighbors and friends but prefer to keep us as their enemies. And so Jesus' instruction to love your enemies falls on fertile soil right in our neighborhood. It remains difficult to carry out. It requires courage and perseverance. Beyond everything, it requires the recognition that we cannot do it of our own power, really. For if we once find that we are successful in extending a kind of love to an enemy, well, then we'll congratulate ourselves for being so magnanimous, and in the process build yet a stronger fortress of ego from which we can look down and judge and make enemies of our fellows all the more. In that case, the high road becomes the road that winds up to the castle of a self that judges and condemns rather than loves. Returning to Obama's words about John Lewis again, he said of the late congressman that he believed that in all of us there exists the capacity for great courage, that in all of us there is a longing to do what's right, that in all of us there is a willingness to love all people and to extend to them their God-given rights to dignity and respect. Let me say parenthetically that many of us, it seems most of us in our culture today, are politically polarized. And whichever side you may be on in that debate, are you seeing the folks on the other side as having a longing to do what's right and a willingness to love all people? Are we extending to the folks on the other side of these divides their God-given rights to dignity and respect? That's a worthwhile question. Obama goes on to say, some of us lose that sense. It's taught out of us. We start feeling as if, in fact, we can't afford to extend kindness or decency to other people, that we're better off if we are above other people and looking down on them. And so often that's encouraged in our culture. But John always saw the best in us, and he never gave up and never stopped speaking out because he saw the best in us. He believed in us, even when we didn't believe in ourselves. He believed in us even when we didn't believe in ourselves. This willingness to love all people, of course, means loving not just our friends, but our enemies, as Jesus asked us to do. But in facing this task, it can't mean that we have to do it all by ourselves. We can't do it all by ourselves. We will find, if we seek to do this, that there are people who believe in us even when we don't believe in ourselves. And so we must turn to Spirit, to God, to grace, to have that love light up inside us. And then we may find that this Spirit and grace and God shows up in our lives through other people. John Lewis was that Spirit for so many, but he found his inspiration through Dr. Martin Luther King and through Reverend James Lawson, who taught nonviolence to John Lewis's generation and is still going strong today at 91. We have to rely on one another. We get to rely on one another in community to reinforce love over hate and unity over division. That is what our church is about. So that when we feel discord and judgment in our hearts, we can offer up those judgmental minds to Spirit, saying, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. It's not a game where I'm going to wait until you show the white flag or offer the sacrificial dove before I will be a peaceful and loving person toward you. It begins with me. I must be the change agent and the peace emissary. John Lewis, as we know, wrote a final essay that was published on the day of his funeral. Boy, that is so cool to get in the last word. In it, he said this: like so many young people today, I was searching for a way out. Or some might say a way in. And then I heard the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on an old radio. He was talking about the philosophy and discipline of nonviolence. He said, we are all complicit when we tolerate injustice. He said, each of us has a moral obligation to stand up, speak up, and speak out. You must do something. Democracy is not a state, it is an act. And each generation must do its part to help build the beloved community, a nation and world society at peace with itself. He said, ordinary people with extraordinary vision can redeem the soul of America by getting into what I call good trouble, necessary trouble. And so he said, though I may not be here with you, I urge you to answer the highest calling of your heart and stand up for what you truly believe. In my life, I have done all I could do to demonstrate that the way of peace, the way of love and nonviolence is the more excellent way. Now it is your turn to let freedom ring. I heard David Axelrod, a campaign strategist and advisor to President Obama, on a broadcast in which he played an excerpt from an interview he had conducted with John Lewis in 2017. We all know that Mr. Lewis had his skull fractured by the Alabama State Troopers on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965, and there were many other incidents when he practiced nonviolence in the face of physical attacks. Congressman Lewis spoke and said this in the interview. We would go to the waiting room, to the restroom, to the lunch counter, and people would from time to time attack you, beat you. We were left lying in a pool of blood. And many years later, a few days after President Obama was inaugurated, one of the guys that beat us came to my office, his congressional office in Washington. He was in his 70s with his son there in his 40s and said, Mr. Lewis, I've been a member of the Klan. I beat you. He said, I want to apologize. Will you forgive me? His son started crying. He started crying. I said, I forgive you. I accept the apology. They hugged me. I hugged them back. Hearts can change. And we shouldn't ever give up on anyone. Hearts can change and we shouldn't ever give up on anyone. I don't always believe that. I don't always live that, but somehow I always know that. Jesus taught us that. John Lewis taught us that. John Lewis, who believed in us even when we didn't believe in ourselves. Spirit made manifest in people like John Lewis, made manifest in women and men within this church body. Spirit made manifest perhaps in the next stranger you meet if you have eyes to see. Spirit knows and believes in us even when we don't believe in ourselves and waits for us to walk the high road. And in that walk, the Spirit of the Prince of Peace informs us and shows us that those who we have seen as our enemies are in fact suffering even as we have suffered, are in fact afraid even as we have been afraid, and are in fact seeking love, the same love we yearn for. So the high road tells us not to give up on each other, but to show each other mercy. Speaking up, speaking out, loving our enemies, all this goes against the grain of our selfish natures. But it means striving to be the change. It means getting into good and necessary trouble. It means we are taking the high road. In this last month or so since the passing of John Lewis, there have been so many opportunities to walk that high road. The fact that some have taken a different and lower road is not our business here today. Our mission is to walk that road ourselves, taking strength from those who also show us that way. Peaceful demonstrations of unity with those oppressed have been offered by many who have a public platform. I found it inspiring to hear, just for one example, that in the wake of the Jacob Blake shooting, this past Thursday, the New York Mets and Miami Marlins showed up for their baseball game but did not play. Instead, both teams suited up, took the field, and stood for 42 seconds of silence, 42 being Jackie Robinson's uniform number. Then tipped their caps to each other and returned to their dugouts, an act of solidarity with those who have been deprived of justice. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they shall be satisfied. I feel that hunger, that thirst, that yearning within me and sweeping across our nation. Our late great brother songwriter Pete Seeger spent his life seeking that justice and taking the high road. He knew that it takes all of us working daily to make the changes we need to make. He said, "The world will be solved by millions of small actions. Each action we take can be taken in love. It is love and not hate that has the power we seek." This is why Pete's banjo had these words painted on it: "This banjo surrounds hate and forces it to surrender." May we turn from hate to love. May we get hate to surrender to love. May we live by the words of Martin Luther King Jr., who authored this passage: "I say to you, I have decided to stick to love. For I know that love is ultimately the only answer to our problems. And I'm going to talk about it everywhere I go. I know it isn't popular to talk about it in some circles. I'm not talking about emotional bosh," he said, "when I talk about love. I'm talking about a strong, demanding love. I have seen too much hate to want to hate myself. Because every time I see it, I know it does something to the faces and personalities of those who hate. And I say to myself that hate is too great a burden to bear. I have decided to love. I have decided to love." That says what I need to hear and sums up what I need to do. To make that decision and live in that spirit of dedication. That choice and that action is walking the high road. May we all resolve now in this moment to walk that high road together as we decide to love each day of our lives, no matter how many days we yet are privileged to live.